Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Jim Ronson. Each week, we visit with an author from our region. We get an introduction to their work, sometimes a glimpse into their lives. We try and find out what prompts them to write and give them an opportunity to read from their work. And this week, we're very pleased to have Jim Ronson with us. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Jim has had a long career as an educator, teaching in both BC and a number of places in Ontario. But that hasn't stopped him from travelling the world. He was only 15 when he hitchhiked across Canada, exploring places off the beaten track in every province. Later, he backpacked through most of Europe and is still seeking adventures, which sometimes land him in trouble, as, for example, when he ran out of air scuba diving in Mexico and was lucky to survive. He started writing in his teens by publishing a wargaming zine called Berserker and wrote for varsity newspapers while he was at university. Jim recently published two short stories in the anthology Hill Spirits 2, a collection of pieces by Northumberland writers, and is releasing his first novel this spring. Well, Jim, it's been a busy year for you so far, launching both the anthology and your novel. When did you become interested in writing both long and short fiction?
I think I started writing long fiction way back in high school. There were a number of people that put together a book about the First World War based on Canadian soldiers at Vimy Ridge. And so we collaborated on that. Later, I imagined that I would be writing a much longer story, and I proceeded to work on a novel about wargaming, and that became my interest in long fiction. Of course, I put it on the shelf for a large number of years, and I only just finished it in the last 4 or 5 years, working extensively in the summertime while I was teaching during the school year. As to short fiction, it's quite a new endeavor for me, because my very first short fiction really were the two stories that appeared in a recent anthology.
So, in a recent Globe and Mail article, Guy Vanderhey quoted Nadine Gordimer, who likened the short story to the flash of fireflies in and out, now here, now there, and said of himself that he wanted to take a break from the high-beam, steady glare of the novel. A little poetic, perhaps. But how do you see the difference between writing short stories and novels?
Well, short stories, that's a very apt quote, because short stories have to get to the plot and establish character and setting very, very quickly. Usually you're only allowed a line or two in order to develop a character and to set the plot going, and you have to bring it to a rather rapid close, I guess a little bit like a firefly flitting into the darkness. As to a novel, particularly a crime novel, which I have written, you have to plan the entire thing in advance and look at a chapter-by-chapter outline which you intend to follow in order to complete the novel.
I see. Tell us what inspired your two short stories in the anthology Hill Spirits 2.
I've written two stories. The first one is called Dark Matter, and that story is about a scientist and his relationship with a boyhood friend who happens to be First Nations. And that story was based upon a story told to me by one of my neighbors who happens to own a cottage up at Skeleton Lake. And it sounded like a very interesting setting for a short story. And so I chose Skeleton Lake as my setting for the novel. I also have an interest in subatomic physics. I've read a lot of books on science, and so I was able to make my character a scientist, and I went from there.
Just before you go any further, yes. Did you call the lake Skeleton Lake in the story?
Didn't refer to it by name. No,
I didn't think you did.
No.
But I was thinking that, really, given the story, to mention the name would have been good, because we certainly find some skeletons, don't we, in the story, I mean.
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's all right. The second story is called Garden of Dreams, and that story, I guess, is based mainly on my interest in jazz music. And my editor asked me to write a story about the future. And so I chose to set the story about 35 years in the future in order to make it a little more interesting. I did a little research about trends, particularly trends that the company Google is pursuing, such as self-driving cars, such as drones for delivery purposes. And I incorporated some of those ideas into the story. The story is essentially a work of speculative fiction. That's the kind of term that Margaret Atwood uses, which is not exactly science fiction, because science fiction involves spaceships zooming all over the place. In speculative fiction, you take what is happening today and you speculate as to how that might affect the world in 10, 15, or 20 years.
Right. So, what have you chosen to read for us, Jim?
I'm going to read the opening to the first story that I mentioned, Dark okay. Matter. It goes like this. The sharp metallic blade of the jackknife sliced the skin open and the blood began to ooze, twice in the shape of a cross on both our fingers. We winced at the pain and our eyes glistened with tears, but we didn't cry out. His blood met mine in our forefingers. Red blood, shared forefathers. A boyhood pledge of loyalty to one another, beyond all adult understanding. A pledge of eternal friendship beneath the pungent, wet pines. Craig and I went everywhere together, spending our summers exploring the lake. At the stagnant end, the green smears of duckweed and the moss-covered fallen logs made perfect hiding places for the frogs and the minnows we netted for fish bait. The silver minnows worked best on the bass. The red and white float bobbed on the surface like a planet. Beneath the planet lay the leader, the 12-pound test line, and the finesse-style bait hook with the flash of a minnow or a wriggling worm beneath the waves. We used lures or crayfish for the trout and equipped the lines with downriggers when the trout descended to the cold, dark depths beneath the second thermocline later in late summer. We canoed across the lake to the islands and joked about the strange religious symbols painted on the rocks or carved into trees. The island was also a perfect place for cliff jumping. One, two, three, jump! The anticipation in the gut, the intake of air, the adrenaline rush when you were free-falling in midair before your feet shattered the surface of the lake and burst into the darkness of the unknown depths. And you felt your body shoot down, down, maybe 10 feet or more, and the concatenation of white bubbles whirled about your head in star clusters. And for a moment, you wondered where you were. And then you knew. You had to kick your feet hard and pull yourself up to the surface, holding your breath. Would you make it back in time? Would this be your final breath? Kick those feet, clutch and climb toward the light. At last you would burst through the waves and look for the other to surface. Survival, the name of the game. You began the long climb up the cliff to begin again. Craig was First Nations on his father's side, non-status, living off reserve in town. He was a year-rounder who lived with his mother during the school year over a storefront on the main drag. The town boys at the high school used to call him Injun or Geronimo or Tomahawk. He said he never really fit in with that crowd or the reserve kids. His parents had split when he was a kid, and by the time I met him, he was living with his dad during the summer out in the cabin by the lake. He had his mother's blue eyes, but his father's dark brown hair and penetrating look. It took a lot to get him riled, but when he did become angry, you needed to look out. He had been in his share of fights at the high school. Suspended several times, his academic career took a whole different trajectory than mine. Not that he wasn't smart. He was. He just never really took to school like I did.
Thank you, Jim. That sounds really interesting. Now we want to know what goes on next. So now we'll take a short break.